Welcome to Panelcast, Forbidden Panels podcast featuring comic books, video games, and movie news and reviews. And now, your host, AJ Herrera.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 122 of the Panelcast. I'm your host, AJ, and with me once again this week is Anthony.
Hey, everybody, glad to be back.
In this episode, we're going to be covering all the news that's come out in the past 2 weeks, and I will be reviewing Justice League Throne of Atlantis. Anthony doesn't have anything to review because he sucks, but...
Yes, I do.
We always just look for his helpful and insightful little, you know, interjections here and there. So all that and more when we come back.
Hi, this is Vanessa with Blackbird Bows, inviting you to visit my website at blackbirdbows.com, where you can find 100% original and customized bows for every occasion. That's blackbirdbows.com.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. It's time for our favorite segment of the week. We're going to cover some news information for you. AJ, what have you got for us?
First up, as everybody is pretty much familiar with by now, the DC Comics is getting ready to film their Suicide Squad film. This movie is laden with big names that are kind of surprising to hear when you think about it, with names such as Margot Robbie, Will Smith, Jared Leto. Just to name a few, it's amping up to what seems to be a very big action movie. However, one of the big names that has been cast, Tom Hardy, has recently had to drop out. The official reason that he gave is that he is experiencing schedule conflicts with his current project, The Revenant, along with his promotional duties on Mad Max Fury Road. However, Latino Review has a report indicating Hardy apparently backed out after learning some of the drastic changes to his character in the script. The various actors cast in the film apparently didn't get the script before signing on, and when he did, he didn't like it. Specifically, the new draft of the script gives more screen time to Deadshot and the Joker. As a result, Rick Flagg is featured less, and this change may have contributed to his exit. Even so, he apparently left the project under amicable terms. The studio is said to be eyeing Jake Gyllenhaal as a possible replacement, but it isn't known if the actor is even interested in the part. Honestly, like, the reason that Hardy gave, to me, sounds legit. You know, he is filming, and with Mad Max coming out, which is going to be a huge summer blockbuster, he's probably going to get wrapped up on stuff. Hearing everybody else that's involved in it, I don't see any big movies coming out from this summer. I mean, Will Smith, there's nothing coming out for him. Jared Leto, you know, he's not doing anything as far as I know. Margot Robbie, however, is in a movie with Will Smith that comes out next week. But after that, there's really nothing on the horizon for them. So hearing that Tom Hardy can't be in it because of his upcoming schedule kind of makes sense. I don't see Hardy as being a petty guy. You know, with the films that I've seen of him under his belt, he had to have known that coming into a movie like this, the big names, in as far as character portrayal is going to go, is going to get more screen time. So, I mean, when you hear the Joker is in a movie, well, obviously, people are going to want to see the Joker as much, or when they do see him, if he has a little screen time, it's going to be a very powerful time, you know, very strong window that he'll be on screen. So I'm not hearing that he dropped out because of something as petty as not getting enough screen time. Just doesn't feel Tom Hardy to me.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I just don't see it as a issue of screen time for him on this one. It's knowing who else was cast in the film alongside him and what the other characters were. It's screen time definitely doesn't seem like the primary motivator for dropping out of a project like this.
Right. So, either way, I mean, as much as I want to see the Suicide Squad movie happen, I'm just more anxious for Mad Max. To be honest with you. But
Mad Max does look pretty awesome.
But again, you expect to hear something like this when you get a lot of big names in a film. Especially in a film that really is portraying a bunch of characters that nobody really knows. Aside from the Joker and Harley Quinn. I recently rewatched Wolves of Wall Street, fast-forwarding past anything that did not have Margot Robbie in it, and realized it would have been a better movie that way. So my faith in her portraying Harley Quinn is just amped up. You know, I'm just excited to see that part. So, Anthony, what do you got for us?
Speaking of missing in action characters, there's a story from Dark Horizons relating to our next X-Men movie, Apocalypse. It would seem that Serene McKellen and Patrick Stewart just aren't going to be there. Based on information provided by Stewart, it seems that he wasn't surprised after learning more and more about the upcoming film and learning that he wasn't likely to be on screen in this film due to the fact that it's going to be focusing on the earlier lives of the characters. So it's a disappointment that we won't be able to see such fine actors, but I'm still interested in seeing what we're actually going to get out of Apocalypse.
Honestly, if you really think about it, I mean, Apocalypse is a movie set in the fixed time era of the X-Men universe. And from what I'm understanding, they are going to be set in the 80s, whereas the last film, I believe, was set in the 60s or 70s.
That sounds about right, yes.
So, in the 80s, it wouldn't be Patrick Stewart and Serena McKellen. It would still be James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender. The only way the other two could show up is if they fast-forwarded or if they're at the end credit scenes like they were in Wolverine. Maybe to hype up the next film that's coming out in the X-Men franchise. So hearing that they're not in there is not a big surprise to me.
Yeah, hopefully we'll at least get a few tidbits. I just love seeing their portrayals of Professor Xavier and Magneto. It's just awesome.
Right, and as much as we can get them in the films before one of them dies,
yeah,
it'd be a good idea. I mean, they lucked out with The Hobbit. I mean, let's be honest here.
That's true. They really did.
They really did. So, yeah, well.
All right, so what else do you have for us, AJ?
Something we had touched base on in our last episode, talking about the Power series, which was coming to the PlayStation Network. They finally announced their launch date. They've announced an official launch date of March 10th, with the initial three episodes to be made available that day on the service. Based on the comic of the same name, Gritty Show follows two homicide detectives who solve murders involving superpowered criminals. Bendis, that co-created the comic and serves as executive producer on the series, which reportedly costs around $2 million per episode. Bendis confirmed earlier today that filming on all 10 episodes of the series has just wrapped, with the remaining episodes now in the midst of post-production. The full season will be free to members on PlayStation Plus. Individual episodes will also be sold on the PlayStation Store, with new episodes to debut each Tuesday. So while I'm excited to see that it's coming out March 10th, which is very two short months away from us, it also makes me wonder what the scene of WonderCon is going to be like with this series coming out, like if we're going to see a lot of cosplaying based on the TV series as opposed to the original comic. But unlike, it seems like they're going another route from Netflix, whereas Netflix makes the entire season available at once, PlayStation is actually looking to go, hey, no, you got to come back every week and check this out, which is kind of cool, especially since they're giving us the first three episodes at once, which means 7 weeks and we'll be done with the series. I'm just a little bummed because my membership runs out in the middle of that 7 weeks.
Plus, you know, sometimes it's just fun to binge watch something. You get into that first episode and you really just want to devour the rest of the series.
Right. So for those of us that are like that, it's honestly a debate at that point. Do we watch the first three episodes, wait till the 7 weeks are over, and then binge watch the other seven episodes? Do we wait and binge watch them all when they're done coming out, or do we actually sit through week to week to week to week and watch the show? Honestly, when you're streaming, you take a big chance, right, at that point.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, when they're streaming, lose interest, especially when things aren't made available right away.
Especially because it's streaming and there are so many other things out there available to capture their time and draw them away from anything you put out there. If you don't hook them, or if you make them wait too long, they will move on.
And you know, people like myself who normally only give new TV series three episodes to determine if they're going to continue watching it or not could be turned off by this initial first day numbers. You know, the first three episodes that come out on the first day could suck, and I'm not going to watch the rest of them. But if I'm streaming the entire season at once, I'd be more apt to give the fourth episode a try because sometimes, you know, it's a hit or miss. Especially in the first couple episodes of a new series because it's origin time, you know?
Yeah.
So it just depends. You're taking a big chance at this point. And so, I don't know. Hopefully it'll pay off for PlayStation.
We'll have to see. And hopefully the series is just awesome. Whether it pays off for PlayStation or not, I'm just keeping my fingers crossed for greatness.
I recently rewatched the A-Team because I love Charlton Copley in it. So, you know, I'm rooting for you, Charlton. Go for it. All right, Anthony, what do you got?
All right, I've got one more here on comic book series known as Fables. A couple of years ago, there was word that it was being turned into a feature film, and we've got an update on screenwriter. Originally, Jeremy Slater, The Lazarus Effect and The Fantastic Four, was linked to the project as the writer. This week, there's word that Jane Goldman, Kick-Ass, X-Men First Class, Kingsman, The Secret Service, is currently working on a draft with Royal Affair director Nicolas Arcel, who is attached to helm. So we've got an upgrade in writing, and hopefully an upgrade in writing, and it looks like there's a lot of interest, well, a lot of love for this project from the people attached to it. Just a little tidbit, talking about his fondness for the property in which fairy tale characters now live in a magically camouflaged New York City neighborhood known as Fable Town. Heyman says, "I'm drawn to stories about outsiders, and I think the fables are outsiders. They're people torn from the place where they were raised by the adversary. They arrive in a New York City-type place, and how we're approaching is that they're people who are all separate, and how they ultimately have to form the community in order to survive." So, it looks like even the producer is totally behind this project, and I'm hoping something great comes from it. Can't say, because you never know. Writers who have great history sometimes drop bombs, but it looks interesting.
Well, you know, if one of the things I had talked about when a few years back when this was first mentioned was its familiarity to the TV show that's out right now, which I can't think of. A Disney show about characters and stuff. Anyway, this film will be its chance to finally be able to separate between the two and to show people out there how, yeah, it's kind of very familiar to what's happening over here at Once Upon a Time. That's it. I remember
Once Upon a Time, yes.
However, Fables is a better story. So hopefully, you know, this shows off its what it can do. And how Fables is a way better story, even if it is somewhat similar to Once Upon a Time. So I'm kind of excited. I was a big fan up until about issue 100, so much so that I read all 100 issues, I think, in two sittings, like consecutively.
Wow. So binge reading.
Right. And I just couldn't stop reading it. So, yeah. Hopefully it'll be good. I'm excited.
Well, also you have more opportunity to do things with a film than you do with a TV show. So this platform, hopefully, is a large enough platform to do the story justice.
Right.
So, AJ, you got anything else for us?
The one big thing, this big yes. story that we've been holding on to.
You know, anything else.
Right. Marvel Comics went online today and had a big announcement. Talking about, well, I mean, for weeks, Marvel's been saying that they're going to be announcing the announcement to end all announcements all over the place, which, I mean, if you've ever read 1 year of Marvel Comics, you know that that means some type of crossover event is going to happen. So today, they finally made the announcement that their crossover event entitled Secret Wars, which is, you know, a crossover event they had released before, I believe this is like the fourth or fifth incarnation of it, will actually be a major crossover event. Not so much in that all the titles in the 616 universe that we are familiar with will be, you know, crossing over with one another, but it will also include the Ultimate Universe, and they will be combining and doing what appears to be a battle world, where they'll be fighting against one another to determine who will be the victor. So very much like the original Secret Wars, where the Beyonder pulled in all these different characters, good guys and bad guys, to fight each other, the winner getting whatever he wished for. It looks like they're going back into that with the battle world scenario. So that, and then they're also mentioning the fact that during the time of the crossover event, a lot of comic books that we normally come across, the thousands and thousands of different titles they have coming out on a monthly basis, will be dwindled down significantly. A lot of the titles that you may have come accustomed to are going to be dropping off in support of this crossover event. And then when it's over, supposedly the new universe that's going to be coming out, they're trying not to use the word reboot, but will be a reboot and a combination of both the Ultimate Universe and the 616 Universe operating in the same time continuum. So basically, in my opinion, it feels to me that their Marvel Now event that they had going on for a couple of years now failed. And so now they're trying on something else.
Well, I can't disagree with Marvel Now failing.
Yeah,
Just based on the titles and the storylines, and it's been obvious, even diehard Marvel fans have been dropping off of some of the classic titles.
Especially, I mean, the biggest thing that came out last year that happened was the death of Wolverine, and nobody seems to care about it. I've not seen it anywhere online. Nobody seemed to want to talk about it with me. Wolverine died, nobody gave a shit.
Which is just depressing as all hell.
Right, but at the same time, I think it's because we all know that in some way, shape, or form, he's coming back. So why mourn a character that we're going to see again? And with the way that this is going, I haven't read in a while, so it could be different. But with Wolverine dead in the 616 and Wolverine dead in the Ultimate Universe, will they try to find another Wolverine to slide in there? Who knows? But even still, it's comic books, man. We know that nobody stays dead forever. Uncle Ben came back this month in Spider-Man. So, who knows what's going to happen. DC has announced that its comic book crossover, Convergence, will be merging its multiverses. We'll have more on that probably in the next episode. But considering Marvel just came out with their announcement today about this, it kind of takes precedence. You can go onto Marvel's website. They have a big Battle World interactive map coming out where they're going to show who's fighting who and where and whatnot on this planet. They'll also be releasing a reader's checklist so you can try to follow all the stories in chronological order when it happens. I know I personally will probably start collecting again around that time because up until then, I don't care about what happens in the Marvel Universe, to be honest with you. They've kind of lost my interest. And then going back and having read The Death of Wolverine and realizing I didn't care, it's kind of bad. So hopefully with this, they'll gain back some of their readers. Now, you can't argue the power that they have with the films and their film universe. And for that, I'm liking more. But one of the things I am excited about to see in the Secret Wars crossover event that's coming up is the Alex Ross artwork on all the covers. They look gorgeous. Some of the stuff I'm seeing right now is just phenomenal. And I'm excited to see all these different Thors that are showing up, including Beta Ray Bill and Thunderstrike on one of the covers. And I'm just excited to see everything else. And another cover that I'd come across showed Machine Man, which I hadn't seen him since the Annihilation series. So, yeah. We'll see what happens with this, and hopefully they can pull it off.
I have hope. Based on the things that I've seen so far, it looks like it'll at least be interesting. It might actually be enough to draw me back into the Marvel Universe. I've been out of it for a little while now. So,
one big rumor that's been floating around is that we're going to say goodbye to Miles Morales. So I'm curious about how that's going to work out.
I have no opinion on that one. It's sad. I should have an opinion. I never cared.
And there you have it, folks. Alright, well, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll be back.
Hi, this is Rosie from Rosie's Reading Corner. Check out my blog at ForbiddenPanel.com and discover new, and some not-so-new, graphic novels, manga, and other geeky reads along with me.
Welcome back, everybody, and we're going into our greatest segment of the night, reviews, of which I have nothing to contribute. So, AJ, what have you got?
I have a story about Anthony not contributing.
Hey, it's not news. It's not even a review.
It is a review. Let's talk about Anthony not contributing. Anthony, you suck. Anyway, so this past weekend we did, Forbidden Panel has like a monthly event that we call the 12-hour Create Something Day, and that we lock ourselves into a clubhouse here at my apartment complex for 12 hours and do our best to create something or work on projects that we've had just not had the time to work on. Creating comic books, finishing up some writing, what have you. During this time, I like to put on some movies so we can have some decent background music or background noise. It always, unfortunately, end up shooting myself in the foot because I end up putting movies on that nobody's seen, so we end up watching movies more than we do work. But we still end up doing a lot of great creative stuff. This weekend was no different than the others. We were able to sit down and watch American Sniper, Big Hero 6, which I'm a big, huge fan of.
Love that movie.
As well as Justice League Throne of Atlantis, which was just released. Now, again, I stopped reading the DC Comics New 52 after, I'd say, about two story arcs in. I'm not a big fan of rebooting. It's just not my thing. I don't mind if you create a separate universe, you know, and let us get into that, but just rebooting to reboot, it's, I don't know, just not feeling it. But I went into this because I love DC's animated films. It helps me catch up, and it has a great quality in it. They do really good work when it comes to that. And up until the Batman trilogy had been DC's only saving grace when it comes to cinematic, films.
Sad, but true.
Now, this film is, if you'd seen the first one in Justice League War, where it introduced the new Justice League and Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, The Flash, and Wonder Woman, and Cyborg, this one kind of picks up right where that left off. It's about a year afterwards, and we're introduced to Arthur Curry, who many of you know as Aquaman. So this film picks up at that point. Overall, I thought the film was pretty decent. It was very interesting to see how they're making Aquaman basically an underwater Superman. Strength, invulnerability, things like that, speed. And then it focuses more on how he became the king to take over Atlantis and all the stuff that happens in the background. I'm not going to give too much away. But I will say that I thought the movie was pretty cool. One of the highlights of it was hearing Nathan Fillion as Green Lantern. So that was really cool.
He was Green Lantern.
Yeah. Sam Witwer, however, showed up. And I'm sorry, but Sam Witwer, for me, will always be the guy that ruined Doomsday in the Smallville TV series. So whenever he shows up, I'm not too happy with. Jason O'Mara, I'm a big fan of ever since Life on Mars. So he did Batman's voice once again. It was pretty cool.
Okay. No spoilers. But animation quality, is it up to DC's usual standard?
It is on par with War. It was done by pretty much the same look, has the same look and everything, same feel. Okay. I felt that they failed at showing us the beauty of Atlantis. It was just very blurry, and I understand the underwater effects and whatnot, you know, can blur your vision, but at the same time, who cares?
It's Atlantis.
Right. It should have been a lot more grander than what was seen. When they spend more effort in showing Metropolis and all the details of Metropolis and not as much as Atlantis, especially when the majority of the movie takes place there, I have a problem.
Okay. Character-wise, do we get a good feel? It sounds like, since I have yet to actually see this myself, it sounds like we're getting an origin story for Aquaman is part of this group or his association with this version of the Justice League. Is it good? Is it solid story-wise? I think that's enough of an answer.
I mean, it's okay. The problem with this film is that it tries to pick up where the other film, first film, left off, in that these people, in War, we saw these characters come together and fight off Darkseid in his oncoming battles. Then it starts off here, where it just feels like everybody's still isolated and refuses to be a team. And so because of that, it creates a lot of strife and drama in between. And it isn't until the end of this movie where they say, okay, well, maybe we should come out to meetings and make this more of a team effort. You know, and in that course, recruits Aquaman to join them.
Okay.
So, but there were a couple little, John Henry Irons shows up. Not as Steel, but, I mean, he shows up. But when I stopped at the end of this movie, I was left with one big burning question. Wouldn't it be okay to say shit on cartoons?
That depends on your target audience.
From DC animated features, from cartoons, anything with Superman in it.
But if your target audience is under the age of 17, technically it's not okay.
Right. And who under the age of 17 is not going to want to see Superman, Batman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and Green Lantern Flash? Okay, I mean, sure, the adult audience wants to see it. But when I'm hearing, oh my God, what's the character's name? Orm, who was the enemy of Aquaman, saying, or Black Manta, I'm sorry, saying, good, I'm glad he's gone because he annoyed the shit out of me. I have a problem with.
You know? Okay, yeah.
Now, granted, I am by far the most cursing person on the planet. You know, I was in the military, my father was in the military, so on, so I grew up fucking all over the place. But when I go into a movie like this, I'm not expecting to hear the word shit as often as they've said it.
Okay, that's fair.
When I went in 1980 something or other to see the Transformers film when it was released, a little bit of me geeked out when Ultra Magnus was opening up the Autobot Matrix of Leadership and was saying, open, goddamn you, open. I was like, ooh, he cursed, he said bad word. You know, but I'm not here. That's nowhere near as strong of a word as shit coming out of this kind of cartoon. I'm used to seeing anime and whatnot, adult-orientated cartoons where they're...
Yeah, but that's okay. Shooting for a different audience.
Right. This is not. I mean, they might as well have shown Aquaman getting head at this point, you know, if they're dropping language like that. I just don't understand when it became acceptable. I hear it, shit and bitch and words like that on CBS and NBC, which still throws me for a loop to this day. But, you know, seeing it in a film, in a cartoon with Superman in it, throws me off. You know, I don't get it.
Yeah, that's totally understandable. The language filters have sort of diminished over the last 5 or 10 years. Just general acceptance of certain things that shouldn't be acceptable.
And, you know, and some of the voice casting kind of didn't work for me. Juliet Landau as Lois Lane, if anybody watched Angel.
Really?
Yeah. And Sean Astin as Shazam and Billy Batson. I mean, they portrayed Shazam like he was Billy Batson, like a child all the time. Rosario Dawson as Wonder Woman, that just didn't work for me. But some of the other stuff did, you know. Jerry O'Connell as Superman, Clark Kent, that kind of threw me off for a bit. But Jason O'Mara as Bruce Wayne, Christopher Gordon as Flash, Nathan Fillion as Green Lantern, although that worked. I liked hearing that, but yeah. So it was a little off. Now, if you're a fan of War, if you watch the Flashpoint Paradox, you're already up on parts 1 and 2, you're going to want to watch this and you'll probably enjoy it. I have nothing to compare it to as far as the comic books are concerned. I don't know if it follows the storyline in that aspect, but overall, it was a DC animated film, so it kind of defaults to, yeah, I kind of dig it. You know, I may have had my problems with it. I watched it again after the initial time, and that's when I noticed I could start nitpicking at it. So I don't plan on watching it a third time and killing it for me. You know, so... So yeah, there you have it.
Okay, so we've got a... If you enjoy DC animated films, it's worth a watch. At least one.
Yeah, I'll say that. At least watch it once with some friends, make a drinking game out of it. Take a shot every time they say shit.
Well, then you might have to watch it a second time. But
right. But you... I mean, we just showed you the new trailer for the Avengers movie coming out. What did you think of that?
It has me very, very excited. Well, it's Avengers, so I was going to be excited anyway, but the more info I get about it, the more into it I get. I'm still a little hazy on the origins of Ultron for this, but I love Ultron as a villain, as a focal point for this film. It just looks great, and I don't know what to say. I'm just gushing here. It's
now being the devil's advocate that I am.
Go for it.
Honestly, at this point, as personally, I don't want to see any more trailers or anything about it. I'm at that point where I'm comfortable in that I'm going to be seeing an awesome movie, but I don't want to know any more about it because I don't want it to ruin the film. I still want to be surprised when I walk in. Now, however, a lot of people are talking about the Hulk versus Iron Man and Hulkbuster armor. You guys do realize we're seeing a movie called that involves Ultron, where he takes over robots and artificial intelligence and whatnot. How do you know that that's Tony Stark in the armor?
You don't. Okay. But it's still fun to see the Hulk versus Iron Man's Hulkbuster suit.
And I'm down with that. I am down with that. But a lot of people are looking at it from a different viewpoint. They're like, did Ultron take over the Hulk's brain? You know, is he brainwashing him? Is that what's happening? Well, I am thinking he just took over the Hulkbuster armor and they're throwing it down. You know? That's just me. I am excited to finally see the Vision. I want to see Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch on screen.
Yes, that should be awesome.
I'm a big fan of Aaron Taylor Thomas, except for when he was in Godzilla.
Never saw it.
So, you know, I'm excited for this film. I think it'd be awesome. I did, however, if I may...
Go ahead.
...watch the first two episodes of the 12 Monkeys TV series that came out.
I did not know there was a TV series.
Yeah, it came out this past weekend. I was really hesitant because, you know, whenever you turn a movie into a TV series, it kind of fails.
Yeah.
There's a point in a TV series conversion where, you know, you liked the initial movie. Case in point, Fargo. I heard the TV series was phenomenal, so I started watching it. I got about an episode or two in when I realized it was veering from what I knew of the movie. And I had to decide at that point whether it was going to ruin what I loved about the movie or if it was going to enhance and add to it. It felt to me like it was going to ruin what I knew of the movie, so I stopped watching it. Two episodes into 12 Monkeys, and I want to watch the third episode already.
Okay.
It was
that
just
sounds like an endorsement to me.
It is. It's pretty cool. I'm really digging it, and I'm excited to see the third episode. Same with Helix. I didn't watch Helix when it first came out. I binge-watched it because it just didn't seem like something I was into. And then, you know, we've talked about this before, where halfway through Helix, it stops being what they advertised it to be and turns into something totally different. Season 2 started, and I started watching the first episode, and I'm excited for the second episode.
Really?
I like the locale change. I like the storyline. I like that it's shot in two different time periods. And the effects they use to display those two different time periods are really cool. I want to see the second episode already.
Okay. I can't jump on board with Helix because by the end of the first season, I was just in that what the hell state.
Right, because you walk out. I mean, okay, spoiler alert. If you haven't seen season 1 of Helix you know, skip forward to the next section. But let's you and I talk about this, Anthony. It's gonna be good radio. In the beginning of Helix, we started watching Helix because we thought it was going to be a infection show.
Yeah.
Right?
World-altering plague show.
Real quick, when the hell did the CDC become such prominent factions in all these TV shows? The Strain, Helix, the 12 Monkeys.
They became prominent when people learned to fear disease.
I blame Ebola.
Yep.
No, I'll blame Outbreak. Because they
Outbreak?
Made
really?
They made the CDC cool.
That's true, but Outbreak was an awesome movie.
So anyway, we go into the series thinking it's going to be an outbreak.
Yeah.
In the snow.
That's what I was expecting.
At the end of the movie, at the end of the series, it's about 500 Highlanders running around. You know, all these immortals that are basically running the background of the world. They become Masons at this
point. Yeah.
They're the Knights Templar. They're all the people that run America in the background.
More than just America. They're everywhere.
Everywhere. And they run this big corporation and blah, 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 blah. So it's either you get behind it or you give up. However, you cannot argue the production value of that show.
No, I can't. They did go all out for that.
They went, the set creation. Tell me you didn't want to live on that place.
Well, I'm not sure I'd want to live under a polar ice cap, but the inside of the facility was freaking amazing.
And when they showed the bedrooms?
Yeah.
I mean, I could just picture just kicking in the room, reading, relaxing, whatever, wandering down to the kitchen, having some grub, stepping on the smoke, having a smoke, coming back. And I thought that was awesome. I thought it was very inviting to me. But how they show, I mean, the special effects, the monsters, everything about it, I mean, it was top-notch. For sci-fi, it was really good.
Yeah, they did a great job with it. I have to agree.
So here's the second season. It starts off, and there's a 30-year time difference. And they show everything aging and decaying back and forth as they jump toward back and forth between timelines. And I thought that was really cool. Again, the production value is really high, and it takes place on an island instead of the snow. So it's a locale change. And one of the things I really dig about Helix was the opening title. The whole hokey 50s music, you know, the nuclear family background. You know, and then, you know, it says Helix, and then the little blood drops from the bottom X. This one, it's the same music, except the logo is like weeds. The background is a forest, you know, and it slops into place, and then a little piece of weed leaks out like it's a blood drop.
Okay.
So I thought it was really cool, and I think that the production value is keeping up, and the story-wise, it seems really awesome. So I'm just going to stick with it. Now that we've got the first season out of the way and we've accepted what it is, it's a show about immortals and a disease that's killing everybody, you know, and them investigating and following that disease, I've now accepted that. And I go into season two with eyes wide open and understanding, and everything works for me.
You know, I have a feeling that if I hadn't binge-watched season one the way that I did, it would have been easier to accept that shift if I had been watching it week to week or had breaks between episodes. But I think by the time I hit that shift, I was watching 3 to 5 episodes at a time. So it just... But I'm probably still going to give it another shot.
I agree. When that shift came, I was like, what? Immortals? What?
It was that good. Even with that drastic change in premise for me from the beginning to the end of season one, it was that good that I'm willing to give it another shot and see where season two goes.
Plus, I think I'm slowly falling in love with Jordan Hayes. Just saying. So that about wraps up this segment. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm a chick, and I read comic books and play video games. And yes, I am attractive. And whenever I need new information, I head over to Forbidden Panel and look for new geeks to seduce. And I'm sorry.
Welcome back, everybody. Well, that about wraps up the show for us. We want to thank everybody for tuning in. Mind you, to please visit us on ForbiddenPanel.com. You can always also find us on iTunes and subscribe to us there. Anthony, did you have any final words you wanted to say before we go?
Hassenpfeffer.
Excellent. So, thanks to Anthony for joining us. Thanks to everybody for tuning in, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.